there's so much more nuance than what you can say on stage, but I guess it's like at least starting a conversation. It's important to me to bring up refugees and bring up the refugee crisis just because I just want people to think about it in any what capacity, or maybe in a different way. Ideally, you want people to see that and then question maybe some of the stuff that they thought before. But even just having it in conversation, have it like, okay, you've come out to a comedy night and you want to get drunk, but this is still going on. And yeah. I'm going to make you
I will meet you halfway. I will meet you halfway. Yeah, yeah. So
I'll make it funny.
Yeah. Welcome to Comedy with an Accent podcast. I'm your Taiwanese comedian, Quan Wen. I interview comedians who perform English stand-up comedy but who are not native English speakers, or they can have a very distinct British regional accent. This podcast is all about comedy, about accent, about languages, and about the comedy technique. So stay tuned if you're interested. Hello, welcome back to another episode of Comedy with an Accent podcast. Where should I start today? Okay, my guest today is the kind of people that gives me hope the podcast may not die, because I say like I've been running this podcast like the planet Earth looking at its natural resources. It's depleted. It's running out. I'm running out of suitable guests that can fit the profile of this podcast. But then some talented prodigy of comedy performers and join the comedy world and then elongated the life of this podcast just a little bit. Today's guest is the winner of the prestigious So You Think You Are Funny. I know the name sounds ironic, but it is actually one of the most important comedy in the UK. So the winner of So You Think You're Funny 2023, Samira Banks. Welcome.
Oh, thank you. Hi. Glad to be your last resort.
No, you were recommended, because actually, I barely know you. I think this is the third time or second time. It's third.
Yeah, the third.
This is only the third time we've met. We talk about So You Think You're Funny. So previous guest, I think it was episode 29 of season one, Joshua Bethania spoke highly of you.
Aww.
And I know of you.
I make him do that. Dirt on him.
Yes, because I've not met Samira before. You studied comedy in the last 2-3 years, basically.
Mm-hmm. Less than 2 years ago.
But we're doing similar gigs right now. So this is how unfair, this is how unfair life can be. Okay, I'm going to skip this part. I feel like it's getting awkward. I don't know. Normally, when I have a guest, I try to find out what they are and what they already talk about. So I don't have asked the same question, like your origin story, how to get in comedy. You have very little information out there.
Very little information out there.
You've only done 2 other podcasts, as far as I can see. And then when I search for Samira Banks on Apple Podcasts, there's a lot of finance podcasts coming up. About banking regulations, because they couldn't find Samira Banks, so they gave me podcasts about banks. And then there's some random other women called Samira. Anyway, so hugely grateful for you to be on, but I couldn't find a lot of information on you, even on the profile. You just say that you are an emerging comedian. You won the Vauxhall Comedy Ding Dong Song Kong Show. I don't know. It doesn't sound very nice. It sounds like that kind of entertainment show in Bangkok. So you won the Ding Dong.
Have you ever done it? You win a dildo if you win it, actually. They have like these massive dildos.
And the same profile goes on to other comedy clubs. So that you won Vauxhall Comedy Ding Dong Gong Show. And then you're the winner of Seriously Get Funny. That's it. That's why my introduction was kind of brief.
That's on me. I'm bad at putting information out.
We have
out
more
there.
Than an hour to find out who she is or what she's about.
Oh, no.
But I will start with my regular standard question. Samira, as a comedy performer, do you think when you speak English that you have an accent?
I think I have an accent, but probably one that doesn't get... I get a lot of privilege out of my accent, I would say, compared to
that is
other
such
people.
A subtle answer to my question, because you didn't say yes or no, which I think is
a nuanced
way to do so.
But people don't really ask. I get surprised because I expect people to ask me like, where are you from or where's your accent from, but people don't. But I think I have an accent. Do you?
Does she? Kevin?
What country are you from?
I grew up in Germany.
Yeah, you definitely have an accent.
Really?
So
in your year,
of?
She has an accent. Because I couldn't tell. I'm not a native English speaker. So for me, when I think about the way you talk, I have to think carefully before I conclude, is that a more American or is that a more British accent? I think the pronunciation is British, but you speak a very international version of English. Would you agree? Kevin's like, she's just foreign. Say that. Jesus.
No, what do you mean accent? Like, everyone has an accent, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're not being that politically correct. Can you tell her mother tongue? Maybe it's not English, or maybe it is. I don't know. Is she a native English speaker? That's my question.
When she spoke, I thought she was like American or something.
A little bit, right? A little bit of international American twang in it, yeah.
Yeah, I lived in America when I was very young. For a couple, like, the first English I learned was in America before I moved to Germany.
And then when you said learn, that sounded kind of British.
I hate this.
So the question is, that is that accent a mishmash of places you've lived in, or is it because you went to international school?
I think both. I also went to an international school.
Is it a private boarding school when you talk about privilege?
It's not private boarding school. It was a private school, yeah.
In the UK or elsewhere?
In Germany.
In Germany?
Yeah, yeah.
Du bist in Deutschland, aufgewachsen.
Ja, genau.
Ah, so. My follow-up question would be, what language or what languages would you consider to be your mother tongue?
Ooh. So I don't really say in my comedy or in my act.
Hence, I'm trying to get
where I'm
valuable
from
information.
In the Middle East. And I'm not ready to do that yet. But so I'm from the Middle East. So my mother tongue is the language my parents speak. That's what I spoke until I was like 5 or 6. And then I learned English. And then I learned German. And then I learned Spanish.
So your day-to-day language living in London right now, obviously, is English.
Yeah, I definitely think my English is my best language. But then... You know, when you speak a lot of languages and sometimes you're just like not that great.
I know,
at any
but
of
a
them.
Lot of listeners won't necessarily. So you can't just, when you talk to someone, say, you know, when you speak a lot of languages, mind you, you live in the United Kingdom. This is not a relatable personal experience. But do explain, when you speak a lot of languages,
I feel like it means you're kind of not perfect at any of them. Do you know what I mean?
This is what I call a Malaysian scenario.
What? How's that Malaysian?
So especially Chinese Malaysian, they're anxious to come from a different part of China. So they would speak different dialects from China. But then because of what's been considered useful in the international world, they have to learn Mandarin. They would speak Malay. They would speak English. They would speak Mandarin. Sometimes they would speak the dialect their parents speak. And even they admit that, oh, we speak quite a few languages, but we don't really master any one of them. But to use in the business scenario is completely fine. It's just that when you want to discuss further into philosophy or literature, for example, then you can see the limitation of their Mandarin. As me as a Mandarin speaker, when I talk to a Malaysian, quite often you can do a party talk. They want to talk something in real depth, then they start to switch to English or another language. That's what I meant.
Oh, yeah. I think it's very similar if you, like, learn your mother tongue from your parents. I was maybe, like, 18 when I learned swear words in my mother tongue because obviously my parents just never said those kind of things.
Right.
So I just knew polite things to say. You wouldn't be able to discuss things, like, philosophically or politically. You can only really discuss what people have talked about around you that you have the vocabulary for.
In a private conversation we had, I actually know where your parents are from, but you did say just now you're not ready to share that piece of information, which answers my other question I prepared for you. You always refer to yourself as coming from the Middle East, but you never share the specific country you're from. We're not going to do that to respect your wish, but can you explain why you're not quite ready yet? Is it because you don't want to be put in a certain box? Or I thought, is it because whether your parents, your mom and dad are from different countries, so it's easier for you instead of identify as one? But then I thought it's not because I listened to the other podcast. You say that your grandmas, both grandmas, are best friends. They're the two hottest girls in the village. I thought that's too much information. But anyway, so that possibility is gone. I want to understand from you why you like to refer to yourself as Middle Eastern. Or is it because your country is not well known enough for British people here? Having a Middle Eastern label actually works better for you as a comedian.
No, I think... I don't know how to say this. I think the country that I'm from doesn't have, I wouldn't be able to say anything critical about it. And for me, if I'm the type of person, I don't really have a good filter. Mm. So if I bring something up, then I'll just be honest about it and I'll talk about it. And if I, I can't envision a way that I can bring that up in my comedy without speaking about it and saying what I think about it, and I can't do that. It's not safe.
Would you also hurt your parents' feelings?
No, not their feelings. It's so just like
in private life,
we have a lot of, like, some other comedians from other countries, they don't have that much freedom to express things.
I know, I'm actually trying to carefully move away from that just in case people manage to work out what country that is. I hope you can tell. So what I'm trying to say is in private life, when you are dealing with people, even strangers, you actually would just say which country your parents are from.
Mm-hmm.
But on stage, the reason you say Middle East, since you've gone through all the thought process, is a very complicated issue. It's just not straightforward. I think people sometimes cannot understand. They just go on stage and say, I'm from the UK, I'm France. And
yeah.
I think these are people who grew up in the lucky first world would never understand, well, they?
I was very lucky and I grew up in the first world too. But
true.
Yeah, I remember when I first started comedy, and then I met up with someone who produced shows.
Mm.
And they were like, oh, we'd love to hear, like, your whole background and your story and everything, sorry, about the country you're from, blah, blah, blah. And I just, out of nowhere, started crying. I was so embarrassed about that. But, like, I think just the realization that, oh, I have to think about all this stuff. If it were anyone else, they'd just take the opportunity and they'd just go with it and they wouldn't have to think twice. And I was just like, yeah, I do have to think, which I guess I'm sure a lot of people can relate to that. So
yeah, but not the audience here, though. If there's a comedian from Xinjiang, a Uyghur comedian, for Western producer and journalists, say, do share the information. Because these are brilliant material. But for those lucky people living in democracy born in the West, these are just material. And once they've consumed it, they walk away. They go back to their real life, whereas there may be repercussion for the Uyghur comedian because he may still have relatives that still live at home and they may be having problems and it's complicated.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, less funny.
Yeah, well, I'm so sorry you have to put up with that shit.
No, I mean,
but has that question come up?
Luck.
When you say, I'm from the Middle East, has anyone ever during the show or after show asked you, but where in the Middle East are you from?
Yeah, no, I do. I get a lot of people come up to me afterwards and they'll ask me. And like off stage, I'm happy to say, like, I'm not super.
So if you're itching to find out exactly what country we're talking about, you have to find what gig Samira is doing. Come
follow
to watch
me.
The show and then go talk to her. Would you share the information in a private message on Instagram?
I have gotten people messaging me and being like, where are you from? I don't end because I think that's. Weird.
I think we have to find the positive side of this. The UK mentality has opened up. They are not satisfied just knowing you're from the Middle East.
Yeah.
We need to know.
Where exactly?
So if you do want to find out what country that is, come to a show and watch Samira and talk to her. Do buy her a drink, though, just to be nice. You own the refugee thing brand. I don't know how to describe it. I hope that now doesn't sound patronizing. Because you kind of... For people whose family have not gone through that, it's considered off-putting for the audience, people joking about refugees' plight. You did say your father was human trafficked into the West, so you kind of own it, and you do horrible, horrible thing, match them up with daily scenarios, and that kind of shock makes really, really good comedy. Without saying where your parents are from, what happened? How did you end up growing up in the first world? That's what I wanted to ask.
Oh, a lot of people from there became refugees at a certain point in time because of, like, kind of political unrest that happened. So basically, a lot of my family and everyone that I grew up around grew up in different areas in the West, just kind of anywhere you could get to.
That's why, because you came to watch my compilation show in Edinburgh. You brought your cousin.
Yeah.
But your cousin lived in Scotland.
Yeah.
Where did he grow up?
He grew up in the UK. I have cousins who grew up in the US, Canada, Germany, France. Like, it's very, you know, I don't know. I think a lot of diasporas, they're just everywhere.
When your big family reunion takes place, it's a hodgepodge of accents, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
But you don't do Zoom, do you do FaceTime?
Yeah, we all have different accents, and I don't know, it's weird. It's bittersweet, I think. I don't know how you find it. Like, when I'm around my cousins, and we all have these different accents, and then I think about the fact that
it's
didn't
funny.
Have to be that way.
For me, I can understand you, but I cannot find it fully relatable because I grew up under simple circumstances. Namely, my parents are from the same country. All my extended family members are from the same country. Family reunion doesn't involve too much difference in terms of accents. But I say I can relate to that because I've moved abroad. And most of my Taiwanese friends marry people from different countries.
Mm.
So the kind of scenario you describe, I've been in, like a big party, and you switch languages depending on the person you talk to. So I can turn to this friend next to me speaking English, and then I turn around talking to someone in German, for example, and turn to a third friend talking in Mandarin. But that involves in-laws or someone else's partner.
Yeah, I think what I mean more is like, obviously, none of the people in my family wanted to leave their country. It just kind of happened to them. And then it's kind of mind-blowing to like sit in a room full of people who are like, you know, speaking English fluently. Like we all have accents like mine, basically, and thinking one generation ago, no one would have imagined that any of the people in this room would ever speak any language other than our mother tongue.
Mm.
But then, you know, the world happens and politics happens and the West gets involved in everything. Here we are speaking a language that isn't our mother tongue.
So in a movie, that family dinner can be the starting thing or like a microscope of the world event, basically.
Yeah, exactly. It's weird, isn't it? Thinking about, well, I don't know. Maybe you don't think about it. Like I think about that all the time, like how who I am and my life has just been decided by other people who did politics stuff.
Just want to say I feel very lucky and blessed and privileged to grow up in a world when I didn't have to think about this. I moved to this country out of my own will to escape from my mom. It's just, and I used to think that my mom is so horrible, I'd run away from her. That was my only thing to worry about. How lucky am I? And then to realize my mom actually loves me. She's just unbearable, right? But so do most moms in the world. Wow. Do your parents already know each other or did they meet after they left the country separately?
They met afterwards, but then their families kind of knew each other from home.
Mm.
Actually, I love, obviously my family lived in Germany and I always wish I could just live with my parents forever. I love my parents.
Did they kick you out or
no,
you came here for work?
I came here to study and then I got a job and then obviously with comedy.
I'd imagine that if you do choose to stay with your parents forever, based on your culture, your parents will love that. Is that right?
Yeah, they love having me around. But
they love you around, but they also say that, Samira, you really should get married at your age.
No.
Is that prejudice?
Yeah, my parents aren't like that at all.
Oh, you're so lucky.
Well, my dad, sometimes I feel like he worries. What did once he was like, you should enroll in like law school or med school just to meet guys and then drop out. And I was like, that seems a bit crazy. I'll just download Hinge. But my mom knows. She's like, why do you need to get married? Just live your best life. It's quite crazy.
But would they say that, don't you dare marry a white guy, or they are very, very relaxed?
No, they prefer, my grandma even, she says you should always marry a white guy. Because she says, this is what she says. She says, because they're rich, usually.
It's like, grandma didn't have the chance. See this, Samira.
They don't have feelings. So when you divorce them, you can keep the kids and they won't fight you and then you can just get another one. That's what she said.
I don't know what this reverse hate crime by your grandma towards white people.
Yeah, because like sometimes in the Middle East, when there's a divorce, men try to keep the kids, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So I think she's like, they don't care. They don't care about their kids.
School in Germany, but then you consider English to be a more proficient language that you speak.
Yeah.
How many years did you live in Germany?
12? 11?
And if I'm doing the math, it should be quite vital developmental phase of your life, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it was a significant chunk of your life you live in Germany.
Yeah.
Yet you consider English to be, or just because it's such a dominant language?
Well,
do you dream in German or in English?
I have been told that I sleep talk in my mother tongue, so neither.
Mm. The foundation is solid.
Yeah, because I had an ex-boyfriend who used to, I'd wake up and he'd like say different words to me in my mother tongue. Like, what does this mean? What does that mean? And I'd be like, oh, I don't. And then I figured out he was trying to figure out what I was saying.
It must be an early boyfriend. Now they could just Google to record and just translate directly. They wouldn't bother asking questions.
I know. But it was back in the day.
But then if someone suddenly speaks German to you here in London, would you respond in German?
Yeah. I do. I speak German to German people here and they always get really thrown off by it because Germany.
You're not supposed to.
Yeah. I was at the hairdresser's yesterday, and then the guy was German. So I said in German, like, oh, I grew up in Germany, and he didn't believe me. He was like, no, you didn't. And I was like, why would I lie to you? There's still definitely, like, if you don't look German and you speak German, they find that way more weird.
The Germans have to learn. The world has already sent 1 million Syrians into their country.
Yeah. They have to learn ASAP.
Surely he should, because you'll be categorized as Deutsche mit Migrationshintergrund. Is that right?
How come you speak German?
I live in Berlin for 1 year.
Oh, cool.
So.
For 1 year?
Yeah.
And you learned so much?
No, I learned before, of course. I didn't. And the year I started to speak German. No, I wasn't. I'll speak ein bisschen Deutsch.
Your German's good.
You're so kind.
No.
Really... Only because you're the minority background. You got bullied by them, you know, so you have a bit of sympathy towards the other foreigners. You know the annoying thing German people do?
Everything.
So they speak English with a very strong German accent. But when you try to speak German with them, if they feel like, I don't think your German is good enough, it is more efficient if I talk to you in English rather than you talk to me in your broken German. So they start to speak English back. And then I switch to English. I speak really, really fast and it couldn't catch me. I went in that absolutely awkward scenario. But I just don't get, it is rude.
Yeah. I get that a lot. Like, I'll speak German to people here that are German. And I don't know if they don't clock.
Yeah.
They look at my face and they're like, that doesn't make sense. But they'll just continue speaking English to me for a while until they catch on. And
having said that, you say you were talking to the German barber in German. Mm-hmm. But was it that you heard him speaking English with a German accent and you work out his German? And then you said, that's quite rude from your behalf.
Yeah, I do that. And I think it's so funny. And they get so offended every time. Because I'll be like, oh, you're German. And they're like, how did you know?
This is very interesting. Because even though we like to deny there's any racism, well, as the musical Avenue Q famously included the song, everyone's a little bit racist. Sometimes. So on Chantal's podcast, you say that if Germans are rude to British people here, and British people just think like, yeah, that German's being German. White Caucasian German do that. They get a bit more leeway.
Yeah.
And you, because you have grown up in Germany, but you don't really tell people, a lot of people don't know about that. Yeah. So at work, when you're being blunt to someone in an email, do you do that face-to-face well?
Yeah.
They just thought you're a rude Middle Eastern.
It's true. I think I really took on a lot of that German bluntness or frankness. I think it's funny. Especially because people don't expect it from me. But sometimes it doesn't work out in my favor.
Oh my God, my experience of German bluntness. I did a Jobs for Common in Hamburg for 3 months. And because I used to be a tax accountant, so my specialism is in UK laws. I didn't know much about German tax laws. So there's very little amount of work I can get involved in. I can do some general project management, data input. But most of the time, I was looking for work lying around. Once I went for a chit-chat with my German colleague, which I didn't understand. A chit-chat is already not a good thing to do when you are at work in Germany. You should have just done chit-chat.
If it's not on your lunch break, you should not be chit-chatting.
And I just say that, I was looking at this concept. This is different between Germany and the UK. The cultures are so different. My German colleague just say, is that what the company paid you to do? I just thought, even if you think that, you should have really seen my face in the accent as well. God! It was like 15 years ago. I still cannot let it go. This rude German woman.
But they're such honest people. Like, I was shocked when I moved here because I didn't know about, you know how British people, like, they think something, but they don't say it?
No, they say it behind your back.
Yeah, they don't say it to your face. And, like, German people, they would never do that. Like, you wouldn't really have racist friends in Germany because, like, if a German person's racist, they just won't talk to you. Like, they won't, you know, whereas, like, here, you can have a friend
for years. No, they can also smack you. I was smacked by a guy in Berlin.
Smacked?
Yeah. Well, actually, he ran into me on purpose, and I say, was ist los, mit dir? And then he punched me. I'm joking. But in general, I agree.
No, but, like, they won't be, like, here, you could be friends with someone for years.
Yeah.
And then suddenly
they'll
say something.
You're not friends. You are nominally a friend, but you are nothing but a friendly acquaintance.
Oh, my God. That's terrible.
That is terrible. So do you prefer to be smacked in the face? How to say that? Figuratively, by Germans or stabbed in the back by British.
I prefer stabbed in the back.
You prefer stabbed in the back.
Yeah, having lived through both of them.
I do like how Londoners are much politer compared to Parisians, a little bit more refined compared to Berliners. But after living in Berlin, when I came back to the UK, I was shocked by the catty behavior. So
really?
Yeah.
Wait, so what do you prefer? Stabbed or smacked?
I want to be left on my own.
What about in Asian culture? Because like in Middle East culture,
we're way...
Yeah. I met this guy. So I always think like anyone who has an accent from the UK that seems northern to me, I'm like, oh, green flag. They're probably going to be nice. And I was chatting to this guy at club recently. He was like... talking to me and he had an accent and I was like, oh, he seems nice. And then he took his jacket off and from here to here he had a tattoo of Winston Churchill's face.
aesthetically
even, like worst face, you know, like maybe his like silhouette or like a, like one of his battles or like a quote.
Do you think I would get cancelled if I describe Kevin, you're not a Winston Churchill fan, big one, are you? Because I'm going to say something really offensive about him.
I barely know him.
I think his face looks like a very wrinkled, messed up old man's... Do you know, like, when a guy gets so old, you can't tell where's the foreskin, where's the knob, and put that together. Do you not think Winston...
No, I've never slept with someone that old.
Okay, I have. I'm sorry.
Who's the oldest?
I was emotionally vulnerable.
Who's the oldest person you've slept with? This is my podcast. What's the oldest person?
I don't want to give you numbers because he may have lied about it. But just let me say, when I was writing him, I do fear he might have a heart attack. So am I killing him or am I killing it? You know? I want to end this before I give myself too much a demeaning image. So when you talk about your father being, because you did sound very shocking, just like, how do you not do any segue between you writing an old man to my father being a refugee?
Yeah.
But that's how it is. But is it that before your parents left their country, they were more of the middle class people? They weren't like the laborers.
Yeah, for sure. So I've been trying to, there are a lot of things that I want to talk about in my comedy, but I haven't really figured out how to yet. That's a big one for me, is like people don't realize even being able to immigrate illegally is actually also a privilege. Like you need money to do that.
Yeah.
You like fake passports cost money. Human trafficking, like people smuggling costs money. Like especially where I'm from, that it was very much, even with like the Syrian refugee crisis, Afghanistan, like the first waves of refugees that come are always the more middle class people, the people who can afford it. Over time, when the situation gets worse and worse and worse, that everyone just tries to come by any means necessary. But it's actually like even a privilege in itself to be able to flee your country.
It is an awkward thing to talk about because you're saying that you're basically going to start a sentence similar to some refugees had it better than others. And for a lot of people, not even in their refugee situation, it's really difficult to talk about. I remember I had a bit of, not like argument, because we're still on good terms, but it was when the Ukrainian war broke out. I was at a comedy show with another comic who is also not white. There was a bit of criticism that, oh, Ukrainians are white. Suddenly, all the countries are opening their borders and welcome Ukrainian refugees with open arms. How come it was never the same for the Syrian or for these African refugees? And I just say, yeah, but do you not see the hypocrisy of you sitting in the comfort of a safe room, even though you're not a white person? You are there complaining that, oh my God, these white refugees had it better than the brown refugees, for example. But she then also say, but it is also true that the systematic racism and discrimination is there and you have to point it out. And I say, well, you can wait for another time. She didn't say, when is ever a good time? Like, who would ever acknowledge this? And this is the right moment to point it out. I think actually I took her points on board a lot later. It's just something that's very difficult when people are lucky enough to be born in the first world and just say, I don't want to hear about all the bad news. They could just shut their ears. So that the difficult thing for you then, you are a comedy performer, you're on stage. This is the experience they don't necessarily have, but they can imagine. But at the same time, there's a gap to their imagination, their sympathy, their ability to relate to what you can deliver. And you have to make some choices. And some of them may not be the choice that you'd like, but you have to do this in a certain way.
Yeah. No, yeah, I agree. It's a hard one. There's so much more nuance than what you can say on stage, but I guess it's like at least starting a conversation. It's important to me to bring up refugees and bring up the refugee crisis just because I just want people to think about it in any what capacity, or maybe in a different way. Ideally, you want people to see that and then question maybe some of the stuff that they thought before. But even just having it in conversation, have it like, okay, you've come out to a comedy night and you want to get drunk, but this is still going on. And yeah. I'm going to make you
I will meet you halfway. I will meet you halfway. Yeah, yeah. So
I'll make it funny.
Yes. But is there any part of you with the fear that some might be laughing for the wrong reasons?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I worry about that a lot. Every joke that I tell, I try my best to like think about it. Are they laughing with us or at us? Do you know what I mean? And overall, I think I try to do things the way I want them to, but I definitely worry about that. And I think it's so easy in comedy, especially as like a person of anything other than white, to like fall into that trope where like you're
Am
actually
I
getting people to
my
laugh
people
at
out?
Your people. Do you know what I mean? And it's such a fine line, I think, sometimes. And there's so much pressure in comedy that sometimes you're like, oh, this joke is working. I'm just going to do it because I know it's working.
I'm drowning here. The crowd's turning against me. I need something
but, like,
I know
actually,
that works all the time.
I don't know how you find that, but yeah. Like, I definitely had jokes where, like, I loved it because of what it meant to me, but then realizing who's laughing at it and who isn't, I'm like, oh, I'm delivering this in a way that these people think it's, you know, the wrong people are laughing at it.
Just for any comedy lovers and listeners out there, we are doing Faustian deals, you know, like every day we're depending, am I going to help with this? I don't want to belittle your experience, but after your parents left, how much longer did they manage to establish themselves having a comfortable environment for you and your brother in a foreign country?
They both left when they were quite young, so let's say like early 20s, basically, and then, you know, kind of had to like build themselves up from, like, I mean, my dad has, you know, insane stories of like living for a couple years without any kind of documentation and then working
restaurant,
the kind of jobs you'd get without any
manual
ID.
Jobs.
He used to paint. One of them would like sell headscarves on the streets and the rest of them would paint it and stuff like that. I think what my parents both had that really helped them or was a privilege to them was their families were both very invested in education. So as soon as they got their documents, they went to university and then they both kind of did their own careers like through that. So by the time I was born, it was like they were doing fine.
Okay.
They were fine.
My question now, I hope you don't find it offensive, is any part of you that struck with the thing that the refugee, the harsher thing, it was your parents that endured that?
Yeah, for sure.
But you didn't. So talking about born as a minority in a Western country, that's you. That's your 100% experiences. Whereas talking about the hardship and the refugee and running away from the country, technically it was your parents' life story.
Yeah.
Do you feel a bit of trepidation or you're fearing the responsibility or talking about their experiences when, do you think there's a distance there?
Because I feel like, first of all, I hope I make it quite clear in my comedy that I am talking about them.
Yes.
And I have thought about this a lot. And I think sometimes when you are raised as like the next generation of people who endure that, they don't have, like they raised me with all these privileges to be able to, first of all, like the schooling they gave me, I think the biggest thing it taught me was how to communicate with white people, middle-class white people, like how to, I think like they wouldn't be able to express the things that I do because that in itself is a privilege. Sometimes when you're too close to something and it happened to yourself, it's much harder to talk about
it
like in that way.
You're like a director of a documentary in a way.
Yeah, like in a way, because I have much less to lose. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I am a level of distance from it where I can talk about it and not feel it's my own trauma. But at the same time, I have a much closer relationship to it than a lot of people that I'm talking to. So I feel this kind of responsibility to communicate with them what I think they need to know that they're being ignorant of. But at the same time, it's not my experience. Does that make sense?
Yes, as in that distance is what artistically needed to be able to process those really raw experience and emotion into something everyone else can share and understand. And
yeah, I mean, not necessarily. I'm not saying that they wouldn't be able to. I mean, like, if they tomorrow decided they want to tell their story, I would get my dad an open mic spot 100% to do that. But as in,
we'll send
that's
this
how
recording
I see my role.
To your dad.
Yeah, it's kind of like a bridge because you need both cultures and both experiences to be able to communicate that.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes sense.
It does. I didn't get much information from you in my prior research, but one of my concern is I don't want this episode to be a refugee trauma porn, as in we're just trying to exploit that experience. Oh, you know how tough it is, and I want to do it respectfully. But I think you phrased it much better than I did.
Yeah, that I would never want to do that.
The only thing I'll be wondering is my episode title. I tend to say this comedian, what language they speak and where they come from. I didn't think about how to phrase your episode title, but that's a much later worry. Well, I think we can just end it here.
Okay.
Thank you so much for your time, Sherry. I've never said it, and it's weird to say this episode after the emotionally heavy thing. But people, if you do like the episode, please give us some rating. Follow us on Instagram. And how do they follow you on social media, Samira?
Oh, at Samira Banks Comedy.
Yes, that's it today. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
See ya.